Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, I take what you pay, but I got to put you down for a while.
Weird intro there. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another Knuckles and Gloves boxing radio episode. I'm Patrick Hunter, of course, of Knuckles and Gloves. And in just a moment, my buddy Bryn Jonathan Butler is going to be joining us. And today, man, we are previewing Saul Canelo Alvarez versus Sergey Kovalev. Man, it's a big fight weekend. You know, it tends to be a big to-do when Saul Alvarez fights. Man, it's going to be big stuff here, dude. And we haven't done a show for a little bit with Bryn and I. And, man, it's been a really busy. I know I apologize for being so inconsistent. But many of you have also been following me on social media know that I actually just recently announced that I'm going to be coming out with a book mid-next year. So that's kind of where a lot of my time has been taken up, or at least a lot of my free time, that is. And, yeah, so that being said, big show today. I think a lot of people were, I don't want to say confused, they were taken aback, they were surprised when Saul Alvarez and Golden Boy announced that Canelo was going to be taking on Sergey Kovalev. I think that was just not so much that it was shocking, it was just that I don't know that Canelo or that Sergey Kovalev was necessarily on the radar for most boxing fans as a prospective Canelo Alvarez opponent. I think that the move, or at least the brief move, up to 168 pounds for Canelo was something that a lot of people thought was probably going to be a one-off. He wasn't going to be competing above 160 pounds. And I mean, also, I think the kind of refrain from Canelo's team, from Golden Boy, you know, for a couple of years now, is that Canelo's not a real middleweight. He's a small middleweight. And so I don't know that anybody really expected him to move up and stay for very long to do more than just kind of like a title grab against, like, you know, Rocky Fielding, as he did. But he seems to have made the decision to be now moving up to 175 pounds, at least for now. And we've also seen in the past that when fighters move up and then try to move back down and move up, back down, it's just not, it doesn't make for a very pleasant experience on the human body. So I'm not entirely sure that they're planning on moving to 175 pounds or at least taking an aim at 175 pounds per now and then actually moving back down. I think that would probably be a pretty bad decision. So I don't know what the plan is. I don't know exactly what the you know, what the aim is here, what the, I don't know. I guess the only way to know for sure is whenever this fight is done and whatever happens, we'll have to see what Canelo does next, because that's what a lot of it's going to be predicated on, is what Canelo feels like he wants to do or whatever. That's pretty much what it's going to come down to. He's the one with the say-so in this situation. There was, just this morning, though, I do have to say there is some extracurricular stuff going on there that probably a little bit worrisome for Canelo if I'm him and his team. I mean, I don't know how worrisome. I don't know how focused he is on it. So for all I know, it might not mean anything. It might just kind of be something that rolls off his back. But this morning, Jake Donovan, who many of you know, especially on social media, and is a guy that I have known through boxing anyway for a number of years, he is a reporter for Boxing Scene, And he had linked to a story by Mike Coffinger at The Athletic, basically an interview with Canelo, where Canelo is, I mean, it's not really as blistering or as scathing as it might seem from a headline. But basically, Canelo is saying that Oscar De La Hoya has no loyalty. You know, look at what he did throughout his career. He changed trainers. He changed managers. He changed all this. And that basically he felt as though Oscar De La Hoya was not really looking out for his best interests, or, you know, kind of something along those lines. And so I don't really know how much of a distraction that is for Canelo, but there seems to be some focus on that this week. I get it. Oscar De La Hoya and Golden Boy Promotions have been the one that have more or less fostered Canelo Alvarez, and so there's some focus on that, and also there's some focus on the trouble De La Hoya has been getting in lately. We'll see if Bryn has anything to say about that type of shit. Bryn, what up, dude?
Hey, hi. How's everybody doing? Get back
doing
to
all
the
right,
beginning
dude.
Of how you, get back to how you framed this context for me to understand your question. What's Golden Boy up to?
So, it sounds like Mike Coffinger had done an interview with Canelo a couple weeks ago for The Athletic, and I didn't even see the date on The Athletic app for the actual story, so I don't know when it came out. All I know is that it was called to my attention by Jake Donovan from Boxing Scene. Well, not called to my attention, but he tweeted it out. And so I clicked on it, and I was reading it, and long story short, Canelo Alvarez, in this interview from his gym in San Diego, says something to the effect of, Oscar De La Hoya has no loyalty. You know, he's basically kind of taking him to task for the way that Oscar De La Hoya ran his career and changed trainers and managers and all this type of stuff. And then he's basically applying that to his own career and saying, like, I don't really think that he has much loyalty here either. And he was also apparently upset by the fact that Oscar De La Hoya left some sort of somewhat snarky comment on a video by Ryan Garcia training. And then he wound up deleting it, I guess. Something like, tell your trainer that he's teaching you wrong or some shit like that, you know. And so anyway, the reason why I bring this up is Golden Boy Promotions obviously developed – Saul Alvarez, how much they developed him, I have no idea. It's up for you to decide. I don't know. But they did, at least on some level, develop Saul Alvarez promotionally. And they're a big part of the story in Canelo Alvarez's career, blah, blah, blah. And so anyway, point is, the reason why I brought it up is because I don't know if this is going to wind up being a distraction for him, because there's been a lot of focus on De La Hoya recently. He has throughout the years, and when I say throughout the years, I mean in the last like 25 years, and that's not an exaggeration, he's been the subject of several paternity lawsuits. He was accused of sexual assault a number of years ago in a case that I can't remember if they settled it or if it went away. I don't know. But regardless, he was accused of sexual assault many years ago. Excuse me. He, I think more than once too. And then recently, about 2 weeks ago, again is accused of sexual assault, like recently. And anyway, not to drone on and on about this, but it is something that could potentially distract Canelo Alvarez, especially when during a lot of these media blitzes and stuff like that, people are asking questions about this. What's your relationship with De La Hoya like? How is it going with Golden? You know, this is a constant in the last year or so. So I do wonder how much it distracts him, or perhaps it doesn't distract him at all. Yeah, I don't want to take away too much from the fight discussion, but I was curious.
Yeah, I mean, my sense is, it seems like Canelo's in a similar position to sort of what Tyson endured on the way up, where he had a nucleus of people that got him to where he was. He had a good relationship with Kevin Rooney. He had his promotional team with Bill Caton and Jim Jacobs and an assistant, that had been with him all the way up, all the people that Cuss had sort of put in place to look after him. And once he really achieved celebrity and this of reputation as being the generational talent, everything fell apart completely. And I don't see really any of that with Canelo Alvarez, aside from the loss to Mayweather, which I don't think rattled him. I think he's improved ever since that fight. I mean, maybe he took that a little prematurely, but I give him credit for taking that fight. He's taken very tough challenges, even, you know, controversially getting out with a win against the likes of Irislandi Lara. I think there were a couple of close calls. It seems to me that, you know, even getting pinched for performance-enhancing drugs, where that is moving more into, I think, some sympathy from the public, that it might have legitimately been tainted meat instead of that being a cover story, like we've seen with some other athletes where they talk about inadvertent usage and that sort of thing. And, you know, it's a shield for any usage can be inadvertent. So I think Canelo deserves a lot of credit for remaining stable. He's still only 29 years old. He's still pretty young. He's taking what, in my view, I don't know about you, is the biggest challenge of his career with this fight against Kovalev. Let's remember, Kovalev gave Andre Ward a lot of trouble in both fights. And I think it's a very dangerous opponent. I've heard that he was a 3-1 favorite going into it. I mean, maybe if he steps in there against a washed-up Kovalev, who really is feeling the punches a lot more at his age than he used to in the past, maybe he's able to get inside on Kovalev. But if he's not, let's be serious here. Kovalev is a much bigger man, a tremendous puncher. And if Kovalev can keep him on the end of a jab, which is harder than most guys straight right, I think he's in a lot of danger of getting stopped in this fight, in my view. But he's also a devastating body puncher, and if that's the Achilles heel of Kovalev in this fight, I think he's tailor-made to exploit that weakness and become a four-division champion. So I'm really impressed with how Alvarez has navigated his career. 14 years he's been fighting, despite being 19. I think I have that right, that he started at 15.
I believe so, yeah.
Signed a $365 million deal with DAZN. This is stuff that has phased a lot of guys who are in the Hall of Fame or on their way to the Hall of Fame who couldn't deal with this kind of pressure. And I've never really seen it affect his performances so far. You know, I've always had the sense up to present day that he is a fighter who's continually improving. And, you know, he deserves a lot of credit for that. I don't know how much allegiance he has for Oscar De La Hoya. I agree with you. De La Hoya seems like a mess in his personal life. I mean, even his professional life. De La Hoya wasn't able to keep it together and has consistently gone to losing some of the biggest fights of his career with excuses like, I was drinking in between fights, or there was chaos in his career, or he's winning a fucking Latin Grammy for some shitty
bad seafood.
Yeah, right.
Bad seafood. He went on fucking
right.
Tonight Show and was like, oh, I don't know. I didn't really think it tasted very good at the time. I think it was bad seafood. Fuck off, dude. Come on.
Right. So, I mean, I think De La Hoya is dealing with himself having a lot of regrets in his career, but the career that he could have had, despite how lucrative it was, despite how successful he was. But I think the lingering taste with De La Hoya is a lot of what was left when he fought Trinidad, what might have been, and that he came up short in really his most career-defining fights. And there's a great legacy there of how much money he earned and you know, being the only boxer that I'm aware of in history where some of his pay-per-views were bought more by women than men. I mean, just really anomalous kind of stats like that that demonstrate overwhelming popularity in ways that boxing has never been showcased nobody else has been able to showcase that kind of drawing power. Certainly you can trace Mayweather getting over into becoming the most lucrative athlete in the world. It was De La Hoya that put him over in wrestling terms. But Alvarez is something quite different, you know, and I just think I'm very impressed with the way he's navigated the career, the choices he's made, his ability to stay disciplined and focused and get the most out of his career, not just in terms of earning power, but he is somebody, unlike Mayweather, where we're looking back at his fights as being memorable. He's putting a career together that is a real argument about, you know, being his generation's talent, not just the face of boxing because of how much money he can make in a sense of, like, in the acting industry, being able to command this sort of fee to show up in a film, but putting on great fights, dangerous fights, memorable fights. And this fight is no exception. If anything, this is a kind of coronation for him, because I think this is a big, big challenge, despite what the odds say, in my view.
You know, what's really fascinating to me is, now we'll definitely talk about the fight itself in a moment, but what's really fascinating to me is that there could be such a divergence of opinions on who and what Canelo is, on how he got to where he is, on how good he is, on whether or not he deserves to be where he is. You know, there is definitely a dichotomy here. And it's, I almost feel as like both sides are correct. I mean, and let me explain, because I know that some people are going to be listening in and they're like, dude, did he just fucking smoke a bowl? Yes, I did. But hold on. what I mean is that, like, there's a faction of people who believe that Canelo Alvarez is what you said, you know, and I don't disagree. I'm not, you know, that's not me disagreeing, but, there are a faction of people who believe that Canelo Alvarez has continually improved, that he has obviously shouldered the weight of being a massive star in the sport of boxing very well, that he has challenged himself, that he's taken on a number of different opponents that a lot of other people didn't really want to fight, especially at the time, et cetera, et cetera. You know, basically mostly positive things. And then you look at the other side, and I can definitely confirm that many Mexicans feel this way, because my wife is Mexican and her entire family is Mexican. And they all fucking hate Canelo, and they all believe that he's a spoiled little bitch, that he's been given everything, that he got his ass patted for his entire career, you know, that he's not really been made to take any challenges, that even in a lot of the big challenges that I mentioned previously, even the fighters that, you know, other people didn't want to fight, that there were a lot of stipulations and conditions on the line, like weight conditions and rehydration clauses and blah, blah, blah. And they essentially see Canelo as taking advantage of his position in the sport by basically exploiting his opponents. So what I mean and what I said at first was that how it's fascinating to me that I see very salient points on both sides. I see truth in both claims. Personally, I like Canelo for the most part, especially as a fighter. He seems kind of dickish to me, but I mean, also, I don't know that you can necessarily rise to that level of fame and deal with it on a daily basis and not be a fucking asshole. But regardless, you know, he's a tremendous fighter. Regardless of what anybody says, he's a tremendous fighter. And at worst, at very worst, even if you thought he lost all of those close fights, if you thought he lost to Austin Trout, to Arislandi Lara, to Gennady Golovkin at least once, if you thought that he lost a lot of these close fights, at worst, he kept it very close with these very good fighters. At you know, worst case scenario. So I do find that really fascinating. And I guess it just comes down to whether or not you like him, you know, who you're rooting for, perhaps whether or not you like his opponent. So I do think that that's just, I don't even know how to suss that out. You know, I can't tell one side they're more right than the other per se. I just know that, you know, overall he's been a pretty fun fighter to watch, whether you like him or not. And that he's been able to put together or be part of a number of really big fights and events in the last 10, you know, 10-ish years. So anyway, I just find that really interesting. As for the fight itself, well, and, one of the things – sorry, go ahead.
No, I just say, and I'd also say that the guy's got this immense contract. It's not on the basis of him trying to swindle his fan base. It's not
right.
It's not just the buzz of something he's doing outside the ring that's controversial. It's that he puts on really good fights. He's consistently reliable for putting on good performances. He takes good opponents on. Like, he does everything that we want fighters to do with their career. He's very active, and he's not just padding his career. It's not like Tyson sort of post-prison where you fight a bunch of nobodies, a bum of the month club, and collect a paycheck. He's taking tough fights. He doesn't have to. You know, he could find ways around that. But he's taking challenging fights. He's moving up to chase after some guys. You know, Golovkin is a tough opponent where, as you say, you know, whether or not you think he lost those fights, it was very competitive. And he put on performances that people are going to want to look back on, because they weren't just exciting in the moment to see how the styles meshed. It was exciting in the aftermath, and it leaves more room for anticipation and excitement for a third fight to be there that's conclusive after how controversial the first two fights were. The Mayweather fight, I think, is the only one he was clearly dominated in, where he, you know, definitively lost that fight.
Yeah.
But I don't think Mayweather would want any part of him if Mayweather came out of retirement. Despite how unbelievably lucrative that fight would be, I think the Mayweather that we've seen in subsequent fights is diminished to the point where I think Canelo would tear him apart at this point. And I don't even know if Canelo needs him. You know, you sign a $365 million contract.
Right.
I think the legacy of that contract is going to be something that people look back on as not being anywhere near as embarrassing as Mayweather's. Nobody is looking back at Mayweather's huge contract at any of those fights. They were all pretty fucking awful. And that's not the case with where Canelo has gone with the fights he's taken. So I believe him and his team deserve a lot of credit for that. And, you know, I don't think he's taken a lot of damage in his career, despite it being 14 years at
that's
this point already.
Yeah.
I think, you know, we could have another 5 years of him fighting at a very high level, which means quite likely the best is yet to come with him. And we also have an expectation based on what's come before that he's going to continue to take really tough fights. I think if he annihilates Kovalev, unlike how Mayweather acted in many choices in terms of opponents he was seeking, I don't believe that Canelo wants to coast. I think he wants to continue to challenge himself and continue to allow his legacy to grow. And I don't understand how you can cheer against it. I mean, I don't think his personality has won anybody over where people say, my God, he's just the best thing to ever happen to boxing in terms of just such a winning personality. I like that he's reticent. I like that he doesn't want the limelight, doesn't want to showcase his family, doesn't want to be a brand. He's something else. Canelo is not a brand. Canelo, what is captivating people about him is the performances, is the way he's fighting and the results he's getting and the challenges he's taking. I mean, imagine that there's actual substance to his legacy as opposed to it being mainly kind of advertising and marketing that is responsible for him succeeding. It really is just like a lot of the fighters of the past that we want to watch their old fights. What created their legacy is they fought the tough fights. I mean, I think it's sort of, you know, Marvin Hagler had to work his way up to get where he was, as opposed to the advantages that Sugar Ray Leonard had as a result of the Olympics and the branding and the Golden Boy thing. And same with Oscar De La Hoya, not to take away from those two guys being extraordinary Hall of Fame fighters and the great accomplishments they had, but they had a lot of momentum based on branding that I don't think Canelo had. I think Canelo earned it a lot more than some of these other guys in the past.
I think that was actually a point that I thought you were going to make earlier when you'd mentioned his age, was that I thought you were going to say he hasn't taken a whole lot of punishment. I can't speak to what's going on in the gym. I have absolutely no idea, but at least in terms of the actual fights, I will say, yeah, he definitely does not seem to have taken a lot of punishment. He sounds perfectly fine in terms of his speech. Yeah, I mean, he sounds totally fine. And I think that because of that, well, not because of that, but at least in part because of that, going forward, I think that we can probably expect, yeah, him to challenge himself. And he does not seem like the kind of guy where, for instance, if he did blow out Sergey Kovalev, he probably wouldn't just say, all right, we're good. Now we're just going to take a bunch of bullshit. I would imagine that he's probably going to challenge the rest of the light heavyweight division, or at least yeah, super middleweight. I'm not 100% sure how comfortable he is actually campaigning at 175. And I mean, you know, you look at guys like fucking the Beav over there, you know, you look like it Arthur Beterbiev and you better BF. And, you look at, shit, even Gvozdyk, dude, you know, even those guys are going to be really, they're not going to be easy, fights for Canelo Alvarez, even if he does go through Sergey Kovalev. So, that's also a really interesting aspect of this, and you have to give him credit at least on some level, even if you don't like it. Even my wife's family. Sorry. Disculpa familia. You have to give him some credit, guys. But I mean, you know, I think that also one of the things that I started out saying on the top of the show before you had come on was that a lot of people seemed very, like, not shocked that this fight went down, but this just wasn't really on the radar. Not that it was the last fight anybody expected. It just wasn't really what anybody was expecting him to go after, I don't think. And so Then when it was announced shortly beforehand, you know, like maybe a month beforehand, that they were in talks, people were like, is that real? That's not real. That's just some – they're just putting that out there to try to force Golovkin's hand, like to shut his ass up and take like a lower, you know – or guarantee or something. And sure enough, no, it was not a bluff. They made the fight. And so, yeah, I was not expecting that at all. Despite the challenges Canelo has taken in his career, I definitely wasn't expecting that. And I do think that this is, at least on paper, not an easy fight for Canelo Alvarez. The only way it's an easy fight really is – I think if Kovalev is just far more dented than I realize or shot. And I'm not really sure he's shot. I think he's definitely dented. I think he's definitely dented. But that's kind of a tough one to suss out too, because, you know, I think a lot of people are going to be pointing to the Andre Ward rematch specifically. I thought Kovalev won the first fight by like a point. I think I scored it 114, 113 for Kovalev. But I also thought that I thought that there were two rounds that I gave Andre Ward, if I remember correctly, that I thought could have gone to Kovalev, but I, you know, nicked to Ward. And I thought that Kovalev was a very close but clear winner against Andre Ward the first time. The second time, and I mean, we did the preview, we did the recap of this and everything, but man, it was tough in real time. I was sitting there watching it and thinking, guys, shut up. Those were legit shots, and Kovalev was hurt, and he's bitching out of the fight. Watching it back, he totally got punched in the dick.
Dick. Come on, Patrick. Like, come on. Those were uppercuts hitting the bottom of the ball.
Yeah.
That was
somebody,
not the dick.
Yeah. Somebody lifted up his package and just straight up uppercutted the taint. I mean,
yeah.
It was – they were definitely – but – in my defense, something that I did say in real time was true, and that was that the way Kovalev was scrunching up on the ropes made it much worse, and also made it it was like a worst case scenario for how that played out. And then on top of it being a worst case scenario, Tony Weeks totally flubbed the call and basically just called it a TKO, which was the wrong call. But I do believe there's a but there, and it's a big but. And the but was that I felt Andre Ward was clearly coming on and was starting to get to Sergey Kovalev in that entire round before the stoppage happened. no matter how stupid the stoppage or wrong the stoppage was.
That's
of
fair.
Course, there,
I totally agree with that.
Of course, then, you know, you start going down that road, the next logical step is, okay, but if he had gotten 5 minutes to recover, who knows, because he might have recovered and felt better, you know, I don't know. Who knows? It, then it starts getting stupid there. Point is, you know, a lot of people are going to be pointing to that fight, and it's just not conclusive. It's not conclusive, like, what exactly happened there. But in the meanwhile, in the 2 years since that happened, he also got blasted real bad by Eleider Alvarez. And it's really tough to say that at 35 years old, when that happened to him, what that took out of him. Because, man, he got slumped. Like, it wasn't like he got one-shotted, but he got beaten down. And that's a,
yeah,
that's
that
a
was
tough,
savage.
Tough one. And then on top of that,
yeah.
You know, he definitely won the rematch, but it wasn't an easy fight, and then just went through hell against Anthony Yard. And that was just 2 months ago.
Yeah.
So I think there are definitely a lot of little angles here where you could work in and say there are – what was it? 4-1. I think they opened it up just yesterday. They checked the odds and it was 4-1 for Canelo Alvarez. It's probably kind of wide, but regardless, I could see why they're favoring Canelo, because career momentum definitely favors him.
I think that's all fair, but I mean, yeah. And I totally agree with your assessment of both Ward fights. I had him winning by a couple rounds against Ward in the first fight. I thought it was a narrow but clear victory against Ward in the first fight. And I thought, yeah, the way it was handled in the second one, I thought it was terribly handled, the low blows. I thought they were really obvious. I tweeted like a video of the low blow in slow motion when it happened, when there was this argument about people who were saying like, that wasn't low. And it's like, you could clearly see the upper trajectory of the fist hitting like what looked like the outline of testicle, the bottom of Kovalev's testicle. But I mean, it was so low compared to the announcers, I believe, saying like, looked like it was right on the border, Jim, or like that kind of thing. And it's like, it was nowhere near the border. It was a good 6 inches below the border of his trunk, like the trim of his trunks. But I also totally agree that Ward was coming on. Ward, all the momentum was there. Ward seemed completely energetic, looking to finish the fight. I don't know how much Kovalev had left. He looked gassed. He'd definitely been hurt by a punch that was not a low blow, that kind of set up the low blows. So yeah, and I agree with you also that the beating he took against Alvarez in the subsequent fight post Ward was, Jesus, I mean, that was a real beating. What, 3 knockdowns? And each one of those was just a devastating pounding that he took. And the way he's rebounded, he hasn't looked like this dominant crusher that we'd known before. But, you know, I just don't think – I still just think the tools he has and his size make him a very dangerous opponent until we see that Canelo is able to solve him. And – I suspect that Canelo can solve him, that Canelo is younger, fresher, still, you know, is confident that he can fight to win the fight, probably most of every round that he's fighting against Kovalev, that he probably will take an offensive position against him rather than just trying to box or be a little more passive the way we saw him against Mayweather, for example. But, I mean, if he goes in there to go after the kill, it really puts him in danger of a guy who I don't think has ever demonstrated that he has anything less than one punch knockout power. And, you know, this is a guy who's killed somebody with his fists and, you know, has shown probably the hardest jab that I've seen in the last 10 years. Like when he's effectively using his jab, I've never seen anybody who seems to be able to orchestrate the kind of power and velocity that he has off of that. I mean, it really seems to impact his opponents like a clean, straight right hand when it lands flush. And I don't know, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how Canelo deals with that. Canelo has a tremendous chin, But so did Andre Ward. And Ward, you know, it looked like he was very confused initially at dealing with just a jab that was able to hurt him, that was really able to keep, not just keep him off balance, but hurt him and set up that right hand that dropped Ward early in the first fight so effectively. I think it's a very interesting fight. It's a very dangerous fight for Canelo, and you know, he deserves all the credit in the world if he's able to solve Kovalev because of Kovalev's dangers. But yeah, I agree. Kovalev has definitely slipped a little bit at this age, and given some of the damage that he's incurred from the losses. But he could easily show up and be a very vibrant, vital, dangerous figure in front of Canelo. And he's the biggest fighter that Canelo's ever fought. And look at just the size differential that Spence and Garcia had, and just how inept that Garcia looked trying to solve Spence. Now, Spence is, I understand, a completely different dynamic than Kovalev, but you just never know when you move up fighting a guy this size that's this comfortable at such a heavy weight class with that kind of length, what it could do to Canelo. Canelo could look awful and just not have an answer. And if you don't have an answer against Kovalev, you are in danger at every moment of being stopped.
I'm happy that you brought up Kovalev's length, because that's something that I think about frequently. Pause. Okay, the end of the pause. Good pause.
Yeah.
Sergey Kovalev legitimately has one of the best jabs in boxing when he uses it. Which is usually. He usually does use it. It's not easy to take away. He's good-sized for a light heavyweight. Not huge, but he's a solid light heavyweight. There is absolutely zero chance of him making 168, in other words.
Yeah.
And I think that he also, in terms of like, in terms of arm length, in terms of height, in terms of stature, he fits the light heavyweight mold very well. He's not too tall. He's not too short. He definitely is fairly thick as far as, you know, he's strong for the weight class. And again, he has one of the best jabs. And it's the kind of jab that, like you said, can hurt. Like, he has definitely scored knockdowns with his jab more than once. And he's the kind of fighter, too, that, and I love this. This is the kind of shit that I just really love. He ends combinations with his jab. It's one of those things that is just, you don't really see a lot. A lot of combinations that you see are like a buildup, like almost like a crescendo, but then that's the end. Like, you know, jab, right hand, left hook. That's the classic combination. And the left hook is the hardest shot. It's like basically the way that you're distributing your, I don't want to get too much into the fucking physics of it, but point is that he winds up cleaning up though with a jab. And his jab is a really hard jab. It's a jab that he turns his hip into really nicely. And so that is a really interesting aspect of this fight, because it won't really take much necessarily to potentially hurt Canelo Alvarez, when it seemed as though we saw him definitely rattled. I don't know how hurt, because he's really good at hiding it, but against Gennady Golovkin, we definitely saw him, say, bothered. And Sergey Kovalev is definitely a bigger guy and probably a bigger puncher. Probably not as explosive a puncher as Golovkin, but probably heavier-handed. So it might not take much to actually hurt him in there, and that's really interesting. But since we brought up, you know, Canelo, I said Canelo's kind of seems like a dick and blah, blah, blah. We brought up a bunch of potentially distracting negative things for him and talked shit about De La Hoya earlier on in the show. I do have to also mention then, and we have discussed this before, and I, one, don't want to make this weird and don't want to distract from the fight, and two, I know people get uncomfortable and bored by this kind of conversation, but, you know, I just don't really care. And I think that it's also important to have. You and I have talked about the t-shirt incident before, but I don't know that you and I have really discussed the more recent shit with Sergey Kovalev. So a couple years ago, obviously a lot of people remember that Sergey Kovalev tweeted out a photo of him wearing, or his friend wearing, sorry, a t-shirt with a chimpanzee on it with boxing gloves. And Sergey Kovalev was pointing at the t-shirt and saying, or maybe a kid was wearing it, I don't know, it doesn't matter. Point is, he was pointing at the t-shirt, and the text in the tweet said, "Hey, Adonis Stevenson's looking pretty good." It was obviously, it was an awful look at the time. People called it out. People were rightly like, "What in the fuck are you doing?" Took a lot of shit for it. I don't know that he ever, like, directly addressed it, but it was more or less written off by his team and by Main Events is like, well, it's like a cultural thing. You know, we've never had any issue with him type of stuff. And he's had black trainers, so what's the problem? That kind of thing. And that was it. Although it definitely stuck with a lot of people. Hey, dude, it stuck with me. I was a very big Sergey Kovalev supporter, and now not as much. If I'm being frank, dude, and if that hurts somebody's feelings, oh fucking well. I don't like that type of shit. And about a year or so ago, there was a claim from a woman in Big Bear that Sergey Kovalev and I think two members of his team had gone back to her house at Big Bear and they were drinking, and that at some point Sergey Kovalev punched her in the face and sexually assaulted her.
Mm-hmm.
So, needless to say, this again presents a whole new challenge for people who are wanting to support Sergey Kovalev, whether it's inside the ring or out. And then it also presents a challenge for people who are trying to figure out whether or not they can or should separate the art from the artist, as it were, in the sense that, can I appreciate Sergey Kovalev and what he does in the ring and how good a fighter he is, and the fact that he is ruthless and blah, 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 but then ignore the fact that that also bleeds into the part of his personality that has caused him to tweet out some weird things, to say some weird shit in Russian interviews years ago, to possibly have assaulted a woman, to have wrecked his car and almost died in an accident, you know, all of these other sorts of things. Am I able to really ignore these things? And, of course, how much of these things, like how much of these are how much of a distraction are these things for him? You know, that's also fair to ask if I'm asking that about Canelo.
I think those are all completely reasonable. I think it's totally detestable, that kind of racist bullshit. I was just looking at the picture now of it. Talking about Adonis Stevenson next to a chimpanzee. I mean, it's totally indefensible. And the big smile on his face as he points to this, is it his son or just a little kid, a little blonde kid wearing the t-shirt? How could you ever make that association and not understand its implications to the audience that you're broadcasting it to, like what you're saying? You know, like I can kind of understand like a little kid doing it and just like not having learned what that means, but for a grown man to do it, you know, especially, you know, and I'm part Russian myself, like Russians are some of the most racist people I've ever met, you know? So you just have to be conscious of, well, that he's so unconscious that he would advertise that on social media is just staggering. And I think it's very fair comment to say, is this part of a broader connection,
a pattern or
to
a,
what it
a
stands
thought
for?
Pattern.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. A pattern of racism and, you know, oh, wow, he's had a black trainer. So that somehow alleviates a thing like this?
And,
no, it doesn't.
And just to kind of add a little bit of tinder in there, as it were. I mean, it sounds like, I don't speak Russian, but a couple of years ago, too, when this happened, the whole Adonis Stevenson thing happened, a handful of Russian boxing fans piped up and were like, hey, actually, this was a thing a few years ago in Russia, too. Like, it wasn't nearly the issue that it is here in the U.S., because there's really nobody to stand up and, you know, be like, what the fuck? It was only a small contingent of people. But apparently, a few years before that, he had given an interview prior to the Ismail Silah fight, where he had referred to Ismail Silah, his family comes from, I want to say, North Africa, and he's Muslim, which is a big issue in Russia as well, Islamophobia, and et cetera, and had given an interview in Russian where he had used terms to describe Ismail Silah that were at best borderline, but more than likely kind of had some racist connotation to them. So it wasn't the first time, is the point, and that's kind of why it was also, you know, more of an issue than him just kind of making one mistake or something.
Yeah,
not
I mean, I don't
but relevant.
I don't see a strong indication that Sergey Kovalev is a stand-up figure for American youth, an ambassador for decency as a person. And yeah, this is very alarming. The sexual assault allegation that's from last June, you know, it's deeply troubling, and the racism, you know, and I agree in terms of, we can celebrate the kind of fighter he is and the performances he's put on and the career that he's had, but we can also detest the personal side. And I mean, not just the personal side, but if you're putting this stuff out there on social media and that you want it to become part of your brand, you know, then I think people are fully within their rights to abstain from picking up his pay-per-view, or, you know, cheering against him, booing him, or commenting on it. You know, it's something that he has introduced into the mix of what he represents. And you know, we'll see where the assault trial goes. I think that's still a few months away, looming over his career, but I absolutely think it is a distraction. I mean, he could be put away for a long time if he's found guilty for that. And you have to wonder, you know, what's going on in his personal life. I mean, I have always heard he is somebody who likes to drink in between fights. Like, he's somebody that is not Bernard Hopkins in terms of living really, really clean year round, basically. I think Kovalev is somebody who likes to, you know, work hard and party hard in his private life. And maybe this is a bit of the tip of the iceberg in terms of what has really been going on behind the scenes. I don't know that. Maybe that's a little unfair to kind of put out there, but we are seeing some signs and indications that it's not just one slip up, that this is, you know, it is a pattern of behavior that is pointing to something that it appears to be escalating, as we're seeing with the sexual assault charge. And, you know, unlike Bobby Chez drinking and driving, you know, this is less funny.
Son of a bitch. I mean, you know, son of a bitch. Yeah. It has to be a distraction one way or another. And I think that it's a little bit naive. If not just, I get that Main Events and Kathy Duva and that everybody wants to defend Sergey Kovalev, and man, I don't want to be an asshole. I just want to speak plainly. Main Events does not have a very big roster, and they are up against organizations that have a lot more money than them and that have a lot more visibility, excuse me, have a lot more backing. DAZN, ESPN, Premier Boxing Champions, and Fox, I mean, I don't even know if Showtime's really that much in the mix, but even Showtime, these organizations, these companies have a shitload of money to throw around. They have a far bigger stable of fighters than Main Events. And I think that Main Events was really banking a few years ago on Sergey Kovalev. I don't know that I want to say that they were banking on him being bigger than he was in terms of being a star, but being a more dominant fighter. You know, he didn't get the decision against Andre Ward the first time, got hosed pretty good against Andre Ward the second time, and now it's kind of like, well, they might not really have many places to go as far as fighters to turn to. And I'm not saying this to be an asshole. I'm just, you know, I'm trying to figure out why there would be such a you know, fervent defense of Sergey Kovalev and some of the things that he's accused of being accused of doing, when really the only response to tweeting out a photo like that, for instance, when if you are stupid enough to do that shit, if whatever it is, if you are, insert an adjective here, enough to do that shit, the only thing that you do after that is you say, oh my God, I fucked up. Please let me make it up. That's really the only thing that you can say. And if you go outside the lines of that apology at all, you're going to get torn apart. And basically the what wound up happening from that is, well, you got to understand cultural differences. And, well, there's a context thing. And, well, they're probably drinking. And, I mean, dude, you know, it was a whole bunch of things. So point is, I understand the defense and stuff like that, but it's kind of tough, dude. It's not an easy defense to make. That being said, you know, as far as the fight itself, looking at their last 10 fights apiece, like they're each their last 10 fights. You go back, you know, only to 2015 with Sergey Kovalev, because he's been a little bit more busy, even with a few breaks because of getting stopped. He's still been a little bit busier than Saul Alvarez. But again, something that I had pointed out earlier too, and something we talked about was that you go back to the Arislandi Lada fight, which is 10 fights for Canelo, and you have Arislandi Lada. Some people, not me, but some people felt that he lost to Miguel Cotto. I definitely did not feel like he lost to Miguel Cotto at all, but some people made that argument. Many people felt he lost to Golovkin twice. Some people scored the fight for Daniel Jacobs. I thought that Canelo won that close but clear. Anyway, so there are a handful of fights, at least three, possibly five fights in his last 10 that many people felt were close, a couple that people felt he didn't win. So, I mean, what does that even really mean? I don't know. It was just something I was looking at. But what are we thinking is actually going to happen then? Because we've talked about possibilities. We've talked about a whole lot of factors going into this. What's your call on this fight?
I'm going to go with an upset and say that Kovalev, that this stuff drives him to put together his best performance ever, and that we see Canelo have an off night. And I think he's going to get stopped late in the fight. Now, I understand this is a fucking serious long shot, but I just think it's possible that Kovalev recognizes that, like, this is his last bite at the apple, and that could have motivated him to really train, you know, just get up for this fight in a way that maybe he hasn't in the past, even though he's been, you know, disciplined going into a lot of his big fights. And, you know, I think he fought very well, you know, and seemed very well prepared when he got in there against Ward, you know, opponent as difficult as Ward is to solve. And I just think Canelo maybe has more difficulty than a lot of experts are expecting solving, the firepower of Kovalev, the length, how effective he is with his jab. And once the jab is established and Canelo has kept at distance, that if he has some trouble getting inside, I think he is vulnerable to taking some flush shots, because I think Canelo has gained enough confidence with his own punching power that he's going to come in and try and open up in combination. And every time you're opening up, you're opening yourself up to being caught by a counter. And one of the things I like about Kovalev's offense is how straight his punches are and how long. I think especially early, you really need to have a sense of like measuring yourself against Kovalev. And it takes a while to do it, just because even the jab itself is dangerous if you get struck with it. So I think that could lead Canelo to make some mistakes early that I'm guessing Kovalev is able to capitalize off of. And by capitalizing off of them, much like Ruiz did against Joshua never quite recovered from like the early knockdown and getting hit behind the ear and that kind of thing. I think we could see something similar for Canelo, that these close fights that he's had, that he's been granted victories from, maybe this is one where it's going to be close, but he's going to lose either by late stoppage or just a close decision, where I just think Kovalev is able to put one over on him before Canelo's been able to kind of figure out how to solve what Kovalev brings to this fight. If Kovalev comes in, you know, being the best version of himself that he can be at this sort of late stage in the game. What about you?
You know what? I kind of tend to agree with you. And I think that one thing that I don't know that Buddy McGirt's really going to factor into this fight all that much. I don't have any issue whatsoever with Buddy McGirt. I don't know the guy, I never met him, but I don't really think super highly of Buddy McGirt as a trainer, if I'm being candid. I think he's a good trainer, but I don't think he's necessarily a great trainer. And I don't necessarily think he's the kind of trainer that is going to make a fighter like do a 180. That's going to like, you know, totally rejuvenate a fighter's career. And I guess that's just another way of me saying that that's kind of like another way of me saying that a lot of this is going to come down to it's going to come down to Kovalev. It's going to come down to how good his training is, to how much he understands what he needs to do in there, and how much he has left. I don't know how much he has left. I suspect that it's enough to absorb most of what Canelo has, as long as he doesn't get some serious body punching going, because if he does, then I think Kovalev's really in trouble. But I think that there's a good chance he has enough. But I'm not totally sure that he understands what he needs to do. I do think he's probably prepared. But what he needs to do in there is kind of, as you alluded to, he needs to get his jab going early, often, hard, and have Canelo understand that he is going to have to react to that jab. And the second that Canelo stops jabbing, that opens the field up, or that Kovalev stops jabbing, it opens the field up for Canelo, and that's bad. So basically, Kovalev needs to keep up his jab, he needs to keep Canelo on the outside, and he needs to basically look to punish him with the right hands. And the kind of thing that Canelo does where he goes to the ropes and covers up and tries to do the whoop, 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 whoop shit, you know, with his defense, that's fine. Yep. But that is a bad idea against somebody like Kovalev, because that is exactly where Sergey Kovalev wants you. He's good at finding his distance and letting himself work and not smothering himself when he gets guys on the ropes. And so I tend to agree with you, and I think that there's a really good chance that Sergey Kovalev, you know, I'm putting a lot of asterisks on there and a lot of conditions, but as long as he understands that this is what he needs to do and it needs to be a constant and that he can't just kick it, I think that he will win. I think that there's a very good chance that Sergey Kovalev will win, And even if it's just like by close decision or something like that, is illogical as that sounds, I think that there's a really good chance that he's going to be physically dominant in this fight. And that a lot of Canelo's trickery that he's picked up in the last couple of years with the defensive head movement is not going to mean that much. I think that Sergey Kovalev's punches are straight enough and textbook enough that a lot of that type of action is going to be taken away. So, yeah, I don't know what round. I don't know the result, but I kind of feel like Kovalev's going to win.
Yeah, it's what I think you're kind of asking of Canelo in this fight is it reminds me in some respects of sort of how we felt going into Oscar De La Hoya and Pacquiao, where fighters just so much smaller, has so many physical deficits against De La Hoya. And it was just sort of like, can De La Hoya be up for this fight and utilize his skills against Pacquiao? Can he exploit how small Pacquiao is and all of that? And I just don't see Canelo being as active and having skills that can transcend those deficits he has just being so much smaller. I mean, there's a reason why so few people can move up 3-4 weight classes like that. And, you know, frankly,
right,
I think
that's not a normal thing.
It's not normal. And the reason why it's been done, I think most people accept, is that, you know, PEDs have been primarily responsible for these guys to move up and retain their power and their speed. And, you know, they're able to train much harder than other people and not experience the deficits of their body not being able to acclimate to putting on as much weight as they have to be able to achieve this kind of thing of fighting way above your natural weight class. So, you know, there's suspicion about Canelo. He's already been popped for cheating. I don't know definitively whether he's using or not, but I just think if he suffers what most people do in moving up to a weight class that's well above what his natural weight should be, and when you see Canelo in person, I mean, I've never interviewed him, but I've been around him a few times in public places where he's shown himself. He's a lot smaller than you think, and I have interviewed Kovalev, and Kovalev is a big man. You know, 6'1", and he's fighting at, you know, 178 pounds, but he's easily a guy in between fights who's 200 pounds and lean. He's just one of those wiry people who's really strong. And, you know, the question is, like we're saying, is I think what it comes down to is if Kovalev is able to show up as the best version of himself and be the same guy who stepped in there against Andre Ward, I think Ward is a more capable fighter than Canelo, and Ward barely survived that first fight, you know, like to get his victory. I mean, he struggled. He struggled throughout that fight. He had a lot of problems, and give him full credit for coming back from the knockdown and the adversity that he overcame to stay in there and to get his victory. I don't begrudge it, but I think Canelo, I think this might be just going a little too far as fighting, not just somebody who's a light heavyweight. You know, it's kind of like Roy Jones moving up to fight John Ruiz. Great accomplishment, but don't pretend like he fought the lineal heavyweight champion of the world. It's not him,
right?
Fighting Lennox Lewis.
That was the weakest title holder at heavyweight at the time. It was a cherry pick.
It was a cherry pick. And this is not a cherry pick. Kovalev is still very, very dangerous. And one outcome of this that I think is interesting, and I've texted Andre Ward about this jokingly, is I was like, should Canelo come out of this with a victory? Would this interest you to come out of retirement? And I wonder. He didn't definitively, you know, respond to to me baiting him about it, but I just thought, like, for Ward, maybe that would be a nice little reason to come out of retirement, to be up for a big fight, you know, especially if it was at light heavyweight. I think Ward could find that pretty appealing, and the amount of money that would be thrown his way. it's just something that I think is kind of curious, and I'm not in any way saying that Ward took the bait from me texting him and was like, yeah, I'm going to do this or anything. I have no behind-the-scenes stuff beyond just teasing him, because I think, like, it's a fight that Ward, I think, would be on a lot of levels. Like, if physically he's okay to take it, could be a fascinating fight and extraordinarily lucrative. And I think very compelling, because I don't think Ward is the puncher that Kovalev is. So I think that could be an intriguing development should Canelo come out of this. I'm not saying it's likely, but we've seen stranger things happen in this game.
Well, I would not be particularly looking forward to Andre Ward's insufferable bullshit again, but that's just me. That's just me. I'm not speaking for anybody else. Great fighter, definitely a great fighter, but I'm good. I think I'm worded it out, you know what I mean? But I do think that we have a pretty interesting matchup on our hands this weekend. For an hour now, you and I have kind of gone back and forth for reasons to pick one guy or the other, and I think that they're all legitimate. We've talked a lot of extracurricular shit too, but nonetheless, I think that there are a lot of angles here. There are definitely a lot of ways this fight could go, a lot of interesting things that can happen, and I like that. I like the idea that and also, look, this is something that I guess I just haven't really been paying much attention to the promotional shit, because I get kind of bored with press conferences and stuff, so I'll usually watch highlights. But looking at a lot of the stare downs, Kovalev is way bigger than Canelo, at least in terms of height and reach and stuff. Canelo is like 5'8 or 5'9 or something. He's just not a big dude. A lot of interesting angles to this, dude. It should be fun. Where are you going to watch it? Or who are you going to watch it with?
Probably Kurt Emhoff. I mean, I would imagine a fight of this stature, I'm hoping that they'll put it up in a theater. Like, in Times Square seems to be a bit of a go-to spot to watch it with some lunatic fight fans, which I get a kick out of, because they treat it as if they're at a live event. But I think it's a fantastic fight. Like, I think it's, like you said, I almost didn't believe that it was a real fight that Canelo would take, because I just thought it was a lot riskier than apparently the odds makers did. But I'm also, like, it's one of those fights that I particularly enjoy. Is you and I have expressed kind of similar feelings about where we are giving weight and consideration about who we think is going to win and why. But I'm thrilled that a fight like this happens, and I'm thrilled kind of like any way it goes, if it's fought well and, you know, these guys are really up for it. If Canelo overcomes this, like I'm not trying to short shrift him and his career and all of that. Like, I'm rooting for him to overcome this obstacle. I think it would be thrilling. I went into Pacquiao De La Hoya, I remember in the lead up to that, just thinking, this guy's just too goddamn big. What is Pacquiao thinking? What is Freddie thinking? This guy's too big, too dangerous. It's just a hill too high for him to climb. And when he overcame it, it was just, you know, it was mesmerizing. Whatever you want to say about where De La Hoya was at that point, when the two stood in the center of the ring, you just went, oh boy, this looks like a little kid fighting a man. And I don't think Canelo is 5'9". I think he's 5'8". And Kovalev is definitely 6'1". He's a big guy. This is a lot. And full credit to him for going for a very tough challenge. And I'm a big fan of what Canelo is as a professional fighter. I think he's really good for the sport. I understand people who don't like his personality, but frankly, I find it refreshing that, you know, he just wants to be known as a fighter and known for what he does in the ring, and the rest of the time he wants to have his own life. He doesn't want to live as a reality television star. And anybody who wants to shit on that can fucking go back to watching Keeping Up with the Kardashians, because, like, I just hate that shit. I just find it so boring. And I like that there's some mystery to him. And you know, I also think we're going to have 4 or 5 more years of him if he comes away from this fight winning big, which he could easily do, that he's going to continue to entertain us and make us nervous on his behalf with the kind of the caliber of opposition that he wants to face, because he's always done it.
Yeah, I think that I understand the contingent of people that are just kind of like hating success, and you know, if somebody is popular or successful, they are automatically going to dislike them. I get it. I don't agree with it necessarily, but I get it. But I'm not 100% sure you can definitely say that you should root for Canelo because of his stature in boxing. I think that upsets are good, and I think that, you know, new blood and crazy things happening and those types of things are also good. But when you consider a lot of the deals in place, the influence, the money swirling around, I think that it's probably – you probably do want him to succeed. That might not necessarily even mean defeating Kovalev or taking him out, but just succeed overall, you know, succeed financially, succeed in representing the sport. And in that sense, I think that you probably would want to root for him overall. He's not a thoroughly unlikable guy. He's not. And I think that's the funny thing here. And you mentioned the reality shit. Hey, DAZN has an incredible lineup for the rest of 2019. 2019, being frank, has not been an easy year for me personally. And it also, for much of it, has been kind of a boring boxing year. But it's closing out strong. ESPN Plus has a handful of, you know, decent shows, but DAZN's coming on pretty strong. One of their strong shows is not the fucking November 9th show with KSI versus Logan Paul. That shit is awful, terrible. I mean, whatever. Anyway, there are a lot of people out there trying to defend that shit, but fuck it. A lot of their other shows are really good, and I think that that's fucking tremendous. That being said, though, yeah, both Bryn and I are apparently picking Kovalev, and that's interesting.
Yeah, we don't always agree in these predictions, and I think I'm usually wrong going for the long shot. But maybe the odds will just come in, and you know, once every 10 of these long shots that I pick, it'll come through with this. But my sense is just, yeah, we'll know in a round or two whether Canelo is able to handle the tools and where Kovalev is at. And I would be very, very impressed if he's able to do what it seems like the odds makers are suggesting, that Kovalev is a shell of his former self, and that Canelo can comfortably get inside and just work away at the body, which is now vulnerable, and he's not taking punches as well, and he can just be dispensed with. Could happen, but I think there's enough left that Kovalev is dangerous, and I think that, you know, it's that old thing of just Canelo has never faced an opponent this dangerous with these tools, and I think him taking a challenge like this could bite him, because some unexpected things could happen, and the stuff that he's been able to get away with other opponents that are more comparable in size, he will not be able to get away with Kovalev. And if Kovalev seizes the advantage, you know, he has the tools to be able to finish. And so that's just intuitively how I'm feeling it's going to happen, but maybe Canelo's going to go in there and knock him out with a body shot in the first round. Who knows?
So this is pretty much what we're saying, is that if you find those 4-to-1 odds, man, jump on them. Jump on them. We will guarantee – no, we're not guaranteeing you anything. Not guaranteeing you shit,
yeah.
Bobby Chez.
No, we're guaranteeing that if Bobby Chez –
degenerate gambler.
Keys, yeah, if he has a pair of keys, or even you give him your keys, you know what's going to happen.
He's going to take your keys – fucking go buy some keys, fucking Chaz. Well, anyway, man, I hope you enjoy wherever it is you watch the fights. I hope you enjoy, and everybody who listened in today, we appreciate it, and I hope you enjoy watching the fights when you catch them. Hopefully the undercard is decent enough, but that that's probably not why you're getting it or why we're watching it. If you are on the old social media, especially Twitter, go onto Twitter and follow Bryn Jonathan Butler there at Brynicio, B-R-I-N-I-C-I-O. Follow me, Patrick Connor, at Patrick M. Connor. And also, if you're on Facebook, find the Knuckles and Gloves Boxing Radio page and give that a like, please. And I don't know which podcasting app you are currently listening to this show on, but if you go onto that app and rate our show, maybe throw a little sentence on there like good stuff, also appreciative. Bryn, have fun watching the fights, dude. I will talk to you soon.
You got it. And you know, if like Bobby Chez, you're the kind of person who seeks out being a member of Mensa, it doesn't mean that you have to drink and drive. That's the thing to remember from this podcast.
It's like the Romans say, when in Chez.
Yeah, but you don't need to follow Chet. You can be a member of Mensa and do your crossword puzzles and demonstrate your fluid intelligence. You don't have to get behind the wheel when you're drunk.
Yeah, no, you don't have to do all of those things. Just stick to the Mensa.
Stick to the Mensa. Stick to a really embarrassing club where the greatest thing that you stand for is that you're a member of Mensa.
Being a member is good enough.
Exactly. All right. Have fun, everybody. Our ridiculousness is done.
Take it easier, buddy.